It's a tiny voice. It can be relentless, annoying, judgy, but it'll also do its level best to dissuade us from doing something we'll regret, like sending that email you should have slept on first, like bringing up politics at the holiday dinner table, or giving bad advice that winds up exploding in a friend's face. Try as I might to listen to that tiny voice when it clears its throat, sometimes it doesn't quite cut through, and I have paid for it. But for the most part, when it speaks up, I've learned when to listen. It's easier to remember, of course, the times in which I didn't listen. And I do have a few of those stories, but the strongest memories go back the farthest. I did more than my share of stupid shit when I was 12. As a preteen on the cusp, that tiny voice generally didn't elicit much more than an eye roll. My 12th year on this planet left me feeling regret for a trio of careless, thoughtless, and in one case, potentially deadly decisions I made, none of which I have ever forgotten. I don't know, maybe we're just on the top rung of the impulse ladder at that time of life, even with that tiny little voice begging us not to. The age of 12, at least for me, was the time I was least likely to listen. I'm Jeff Hoyt. This is Hoytus Interruptus. We'll make three stops today on the Hoytus Interruptus Apology Tour. I was 12 when I was given my first BB gun. And you're probably thinking, oh God, I know where this is going. I loved my BB gun. No tree, trunk, or stop sign was safe. I'd stalk the trees in the woods as if they were the enemy, jumping out and firing, only to dive behind another tree for cover from my imaginary foe. One day, I was sitting in the meadow with my gun, looking around for some inanimate object to shoot, when I looked up and saw a robin sitting on a telephone line, about 40 feet away. Knowing that I'd never actually hit it, I waved the gun wildly toward the robin, didn't even aim, and just pulled the trigger. The tiny voice was there, but failed to get traction. I watched the bird fall backwards off the wire and into the weeds below. I think I must have gone into slow-motion movie mode.
No!
I ran toward the bird, presumably also in slow motion, which I found, but it was too late. The bird was dead, and I had murdered it. My chances of ever becoming a hunter later in life were already slim to none to begin with, but they pretty much died with that bird. Sorry, Robin. My bad. Next up, my younger sister, Karen. She loved horses. In fact, she collected them. My relatives had little trouble thinking of gifts to give her when she was a girl. They could just buy her a new porcelain horse for her collection, and she was delighted. Her favorite was a jet black stallion, which sat on the top shelf of the bookcase where her small collection was staged. The horse was reared up with its black mane flowing, a beautiful piece. One day, when I was 12, of course, and Karen was 10, we got into an argument, no idea what it was about, doesn't really matter. But of course the whole thing escalated, like it does with kids that age, and I needed leverage, so I grabbed her black stallion and told her I would drop it if she didn't do or stop doing whatever the hell it was we were arguing about. Karen looked at me holding her precious horse and said, "You wouldn't dare." And she said it with confidence, as she had every reason to think I wouldn't dare. I wasn't that kid. I'd never destroyed anything of hers in the past. Why should I start now? Of course, I'd also never killed another living thing before the robin a few weeks earlier, so my reputation was on shaky ground. And I had been dared. When you're 12, a dare has that certain you-can-never-go-back quality to it. There was that tiny voice again, telling me to please not drop the horse. But then I opened my hands, and gravity did what gravity does. I have never forgotten the look on my sister's face as she dropped to her knees as the horse hit the ground. It broke into at least 5 pieces, and Karen looked up at me, holding the broken shards, her face the saddest I'd ever seen it. I don't think she was even angry at me. She was just grieving for her horse. I felt about a half inch tall at that moment. And I'm still sorry about that, Karen. Guess I can count myself as lucky that she claims to not even remember this incident. I don't know how that's even possible. Could I have dreamt this whole story, and it never actually happened? Or maybe it's just a repressed childhood memory. It'll all come out eventually in Karen's yet-to-be-released memoir, The Porcelain Horse. And you'd think by now that my tiny voice and I would be starting to build the foundation of a relationship. But the rule of three demands that I complete the trifecta, so here we go. And I remember this story like it was yesterday. Growing up in Indiana at the age of 12 also meant having lots of fun with snow. There was always plenty of it around in the winters of my youth, and that meant sledding and fort building and snowball fights. I think we can all agree that snow was and still is a glorious plaything. And as a kid, I'll admit I did a certain amount of throwing snowballs at cars. Seemed harmless. Most cars would proceed apace, but it was always great fun to disappear into the woods if the driver got mad and slammed on the brakes to scare us. One afternoon, my family was visiting friends of ours on the outskirts of town. They lived out in the country, but on a fairly busy state road with a good amount of traffic. They had a long row of tall bushes that separated their front yard from the road, so you could not see traffic from either direction, except at the opening formed by their driveway. There was plenty of fresh snow on the ground, and it was still falling. So my friends Pat and Phil and I thought it would be a heck of a good time to just lob snowballs over the thick bushes out onto the road by only gauging the sound of the invisible approaching cars. Probably missed 95% of the cars we threw at. It's not easy hitting a target you can't see. When we finally decided we were bored and started heading for the backyard, I heard the sound of an approaching motorcycle. I made a snowball. And there was that tiny voice telling me, "Do not throw this. Not at a motorcycle." Even at 12, I understood this was a bad idea. But like the BB gun and the robin, without even thinking about how I was timing my launch, I simply lofted the snowball high into the air over the high hedges and out over the road, and I either hit him or the snowball landed close enough to freak him out, because as he passed the open driveway, I could see him weaving and skidding and trying to keep the bike upright. I held my breath and watched as he somehow managed to regain control and came to a stop, where he sat with his head down, probably waiting for his heartbeat to return to normal. My friends ran for the woods, but I just froze. Once the guy had recovered from having the shit scared out of him, he actually did me a huge solid. He didn't come after me. He just got off his bike and headed straight for the house. I could have escaped to the woods with my friends, but for once I told that tiny voice to shut the fuck up, because I was so busted. My parents were in that house, and I was about to face the consequences of my actions. Running and hiding would only lengthen the sentence. I can't even remember how long I was grounded, but I'm sure it was for most of the rest of the Johnson administration. Whoever you were on that motorcycle, I am so, so sorry. And also thankful. It would not have been good for me to escape that moment without paying for it. So I have taken into adulthood the notion that that tiny voice is really not so tiny. It wants to step you back from the cliff. It's there to save your ass. And it doesn't speak up unless it has something really important to say. From an island in the upper left-hand corner of the lower 48, that's Hoytus Interruptus. I'm Jeff Hoyt.